Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I'm Dr. Lisa. And I give a shit. How you doing today? How you doing, folks? What's going on out there? We have a polar vortex. I like that. It makes it sound really like scary and big and important, and maybe like our planet is in such a like disaster right now. Maybe that will sort of just swallow it all up and take it away or something. That's what I'm hoping. I think that I'm in this wacky mood right at the moment because I have this couple here as my guests today who have put me in this frame of mind because of all the research I did on them, and now my head is spinning because there's so many levels to this. I'm gonna get into that, but before I get into that, let me just remind you that you are listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, which is the greatest radio station in the world, and you should go to our website and donate money. Because we are, you know what? This is like a nonprofit seat of the pants operation. And we do a lot for people. We do a lot for the community. We're doing a lot for you. So just go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate. Tell them Dr. Lisa sent you, okay? There you go. So let me tell you what's going on today. So I have this couple, art and life couple, Jen Catron and Paul Outlaw. And the reason they're here today is because they have an amazing, fantastic, like, I'm going to try and explain it in a second, but it's a really outrageously good show at Postmaster's Gallery, which is a really, actually, I mean, I can actually say genuinely that's a really good gallery. It's a gallery that I'm just telling you personally, like, I really respect it. It's been around since 19. It's like an original gallery that's gone through a lot of iterations. 84.
35 years.
35 years. And they followed, you know, they were in, like, the Lower East Side in the very beginning, the East Village, and then they went to Chelsea, and now they're in Tribeca, and it's really a great gallery, actually, because of the artists that they show. They have a lot of great artists there, like Chris Farine is a friend of mine. He's awesome. Jen and Paul, obviously. And they also have Molly Crabapple and Jen and Kevin McCoy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Got to give them a shout out too. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it's really a great gallery, and they do kind of ride that line between being like professional, highly professional and practical, but also really innovative, original, and conceptual, and very intelligent work. So you guys must be proud to be part of that roster, right?
Yes, we definitely are.
Okay.
They're amazing.
Okay. Talk into the mic.
Oh.
There. Let's see. We didn't practice, folks. So anyway, they have this really, really, really amazing show. And we're going to get to that in a second. But first, I just want you to get a sense of who they are if you don't know them. By the way, did you know you guys were so popular when I announced that you were going to be on my show on Facebook? You got like more likes than most, than a lot of my guests.
Get out of here.
Popular couple. They're a very, very popular couple.
Thanks, Facebook.
And if you were in the room with me right now, you would see why. Because they got it. They're like, you know, they're on all, they're, what do you call that? All fours. They're operating on all the cylinders, all five cylinders.
And we're adorable.
And they're adorable.
I mean, that certainly
helps. They're very appealing. And they have this really positive vibe. You guys, okay, so I'm just going to talk about you like you're not here, okay? I'm talking to my listeners.
Great.
All right, I'm talking to my listeners. So I'm just.
We'll step out for a second.
No. You mean mentally. By the way, it's also like, can you believe how hot it is in the studio, right?
I thought you did that on purpose.
No.
Put us in the hot seat.
No, I was hoping it would be normal today. We're always complaining. 100 Bogart, if you're listening. I love 100 Bogart, but if you're listening, the studio's really hot. We've been telling you that. I know it. Anyway, so the thing is, like, they are just incredibly likable people. Like, which is, like, rare. Here's what's weird about them. They both individually and together have, like, so much personality. But they're also really likable, which is sort of a weird combination.
So we're doing something right. This is what we're going for. This is what we want.
Yes. So that's what's really strange about them, or really unusual. And I think why people are so, and they always like seem to bring a good time with them. But on top of that, like, I just want to talk about their work for a minute, because the first thing I said to them when they came in is that I don't really know how to describe their work, because there's so much of it and it's so diverse. But here's what I'm going to tell you. The integrity of the work is beyond belief, meaning that the thinking behind it is incredible. The execution is amazing. And it's really, they're really, to me, an outstanding, I know you're here and I don't have to, I'm kissing your, you think I'm, no, but I mean, genuinely, these guys are people, I've known them like probably almost 10 years or something.
Something like that, yeah.
I've followed their careers for a really long time and I have seen a lot of their work. And the thing about it is it's always surprising, and it's always like they seem to almost reinvent the wheel. And there's very, very, very few artists that can do that so successfully. And most of their work is really interactive and fun and colorful. And I really can't. Let me just say that one of the first meetings with them, or the first time I really saw their work, that really stood out in my mind was this dinner at Gallery Allegra La Viola. I'm going to let you guys explain that. And I want you guys to explain the work, because it's almost like, it's like walking into like a supermarket that has all of your favorite foods and it's completely perfectly stocked and you can't even get around there because it's so overwhelming, you want everything. So that's how I describe it. Okay, so do the dinner for a minute, yeah. and then explain the body of work that you guys have.
Well, that's all remarkably sweet of you, Dr. Lisa. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For a wonderful introduction. I think that we're hitting on all some positive notes there. So that's all great. We're excited to be here. Thank you for having us on the show.
My pleasure.
The dinner party you're referring to was at Allegra La Viola Gallery down on the Lower East Side. It was Jen and I, our first gallery show in New York City, right? Our first solo show in New York City. So it was a bit of our premiere, but we really kind of we kind of like to blow things up when we move into a space and especially New York City. So we did want to bring something that was a little. Unorthodox.
It was so surreal. Yeah. There were like, it was beautifully done, but there were like heads popping out of tables and.
Yeah. So we created this table where people would sit down for this overly sumptuous dinner.
Yeah.
And we painted
sinful,
all.
A sinful dinner.
You know, everything was like painted gold and just excessive. The whole gallery turned into like a Baroque Rococo, you know, a mixing of different,
flagrant,
like,
and flamboyant.
It was just all
over the top.
And we placed a clear table in the middle of the room and people would sit down for what we thought at the time was a very expensive dinner. It was like $100 a meal. We're like, oh, people will never come. It's so expensive. So people would sit down to dinner and then the table would actually rise 10 feet up in the air and people.
Without their knowledge. They were sitting down for a normal dinner party, as normal as it, you know, as ridiculous as it was.
No, well.
But then after they sat, we did press a button and the entire table, chairs, people and all rose up to the ceiling.
It was amazing. It was like one of those experiences that like you'll never forget. And that, like, I mean, it's, you know, It felt like a once in a lifetime experience, which I don't feel that often in the art world, sadly. Oh, that's so cynical. But anyway, explain your body of work if you can a little bit. Like, what's the parameters of it, or talk about it.
What's our favorite talking point, or our favorite thing to discuss about our works is that we don't actually have any parameters on what we do, and that's very intentional for us. Very we don't want to be the kind of artist that gets locked into selling a specific work and has to produce that work and over and over and over again for the next 70 years.
Which, frankly, like probably hurts our career, too.
Sure, yeah.
But that's the way we like it.
But it also keeps it interesting.
You guys are not practical about your career.
No, we're not practical.
I mean, I think you have a great practical career, but not practical.
Not practical.
Yeah, but a lot of it began with a performance 10, 12 years ago when we started doing performance work, because it was it's had quite a resurgence lately, but at the time it was not a lot of people were doing it at the time.
Yeah, so it was a bit of a response to kind of like a static feeling in the art world and work being made for collectors, which is a different type of work than the culturally impactful work that we wanted to be making. So we made work that was impossible to buy.
Right.
Well, like, I know your first project in New York was a crawfish truck or something?
Yeah.
Gin and Outlaws fish fry truck and crawfish boil.
And we actually made a food truck and then we cut it open, inserted hydraulics so it unfolded into a seating area. And we actually parked outside
this building.
Yeah. On Bushwick.
And we served a live crawfish. Well, we cooked the crawfish, but we flew up live crawfish from Louisiana. And then we had a fish fry, fried pickles, sweet tea. We moved to New York and we were kind of seeing like this cultural clash that was starting to happen. And I think has only been gotten worse and worse this time as we are seeing now.
Oddly enough, it's becoming more and more relevant. What we were doing at the time.
It does
sound like just the food truck, whatever. But I mean, this was a special food truck because it did pop open into a full fledged restaurant.
And it had American flags everywhere, country music.
But it was a performance, you know,
Here's the thing about your work. I mean, just by nature of who you guys are, it has to be performance because you're both such big personalities and so visually striking, I guess, that, and like the combination of you two as a couple, because Jen is so feminine and glamorous, and you look like a bear.
I was looking for a cowboy
bear, but with a classy Western cowboy
bear.
Like a huge beard and shit. So the two of them together, folks, you got to see the pictures. I posted it, but the thing is that what you make is always visually stunning. So you have to imagine, kids, that like the cart or the truck is just full on visual Americana everything, and then the two of them are also doing this performance. So you know it's really original, and I encourage you to look it up and do your own fucking research, okay? I'm not here to hold your hand and walk you through this, all right? But most importantly, and also just like what big deals these guys are. So they have this list here that I printed out of all their press, and it's like about, I don't know, it's like 40, just so you know, it's like 40 listings. I can't even begin to tell you all the stuff. It's like the New York Times, Interview Magazine, Wall Street Journal, Hyperallergic, Art in America, New York Times twice. How many solo shows have you guys had?
I guess this would count as our fourth solo show.
But if you count our guerrilla artworks across New York City, we could say six.
I mean, okay. I mean, it's their career is weird. They're very well known and impressive. And I'm not going to be able to explain it to you guys because their career is so weird.
It is weird.
They had a bus. I love this. You did that bus. Mm-hmm. I still have like the Jerry Saltz Christmas card that talks when you push the button. But they had this bus that they, the whole outside, the inside, the souvenirs were all brilliant and for sale and well made, and you drove around Chelsea and
Jen and Paul's one stop shopping Souvenir City and Chelsea bus tours, took me a long time to practice saying that over and over again.
We actually took a shuttle bus, like an airport shuttle bus. Paul manually.
This was a homemade double decker bus.
Totally illegal.
We took all the seats out of the bottom and put them on top. And then put a staircase inside the bus and then made everyone go on top while we loaded the first floor full of art blue chip artist ripoffs, souvenirs of all your favorite artists.
They were so good.
No one can afford this artwork. Nobody can take this home.
Oh, but it was
so
we
were there to fill the gap. We want you to take a piece of this artwork.
I loved it. It was all really funny stuff. And it was illegal? Were you worried about getting...
It was highly illegal.
I pretended like we went through these loops. Like, we had under 15 passengers, so it technically wasn't a bus. I mean, listen, these are...
Loaded yourself up. Did you get in any trouble?
No.
We did not. We were passing cops waving at them.
And we
nothing.
I don't... We would stop at Gagosian Gallery and just yell for Larry to come out and wave. And
did he?
No, he sent us a letter, though.
Like what? Stop asking me that.
Well, no, it's because we were reappropriating Richard Prince.
Jesus!
Richard Prince Prince.
Oh, Richard Prince. Hilarious. Yeah,
so we reappropriated the Prince that he reappropriated.
That's an artwork for sure.
And do you have those?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But we were traveling through Chelsea using loudspeakers to announce the art that was in the galleries that you couldn't see from our bus. Yeah. We're just describing it. And our tours were hilarious. We had guest tour guides that were amazing and hilarious. And it was a fun time. You had a lot of attendance, right?
Yeah, we did. The tours were free. So anyone could hop on the bus and take a tour of the gallery. We were giving tours of all the big blue chip Chelsea galleries without actually going inside the galleries. So we were making up stories about the artist and the work and what was going through the windows.
We
would give
coupons.
You our critique through the windows of the gallery.
And we gave coupons for half off David Zwirner and Gagosian. Yeah. Oh, and the Half King. People kept on taking him to the Half King.
50% off appetizers at the Half King.
They were totally made up.
Just tell them Jen and Paul's one-stop shopping souvenir city and Chelsea bus stores.
And people tried to use them. It was so
wow.
Great.
What did you get any feedback on that?
Oh yeah, they hated us.
They hated you. Oh god.
Everybody in Chelsea hated us. Although I will say, David Zwirner, his staff bought a lot of the products on our bus. So
okay. He
was a little friendlier towards the bus than let's say Larry Gagosian.
But what was really, we were getting a lot of phone call complaints from the new residents of the new loft buildings that moved into Chelsea.
The rich were kicking
all the art galleries out, which was also kind of a ironic twist. Like, yeah. I'm sorry, is the artwork bothering you?
Okay, so... My people there, and my people that I always picture in like their basement somewhere, listening to the radio in the afternoon. Do you get the feeling
the fans.
Like they're fun? Their work is fun, but it's also like smart, and there's a performance. You get it, right? So the most important thing is the show that they have going on right now, and then we're going to get into talking about the relationship. They said they would. And you know, I'm going to ask. So anyway, but I want to talk about their show, which I mentioned before, but I want to give you guys the specifics about it and an idea of what you're going to see when you go there. So anyway, like I said, it's at Postmaster's Gallery, which is at 54 Franklin Street in Tribeca. The hours are Tuesday through Saturday, 11 to 6, Thursdays. That's tonight till 8. What are you doing tonight? It's free. You could go on a Tinder date there or something. It's free. And actually kind of sexy. And you always look smart when you invite somebody to go to an art gallery. I think that you should go on a date there tonight, whoever you are. But anyway, the title of the show is called An Idea of God or Toothbrush, which is taken from a Dada artist, Tristan Zara, who's really famous historical Dada figure. If you guys don't know, look that up too while you're on your Google search, okay? And anyway, so this is how I described it to my friend Margo, who I was saying, you got to see this. So this is how I described it. This is probably not the exact right way to describe it, but I said what they did was they captured these really like horrible mass, like a lot of them are mass suicides and really famous, tragic, horrific events, mass killings. Like they have, what is it? They have Listen, go ahead. Sandy Hook.
And Jonestown.
Sandy Hook, Jonestown.
Paired, but next to it, we have like Alex Jones and Jim Baker and people who promote conspiracies or are kind of hucksters, I guess you could say, snake oil type political characters.
So there are all these like horrible events, but the way that they're executed is in this sort of dollhouse feeling. And it has this sort of like, handmade feeling, but it also has all this charm of like a dollhouse. And when you first come across the work, you think, this is so cute. Look at this long table of all these little, you know, you imagine all these little dolls eating dinner. And which one is that?
Heaven's Gate. That was their last meal at Marie Callender's before they committed suicide.
Yeah. And how did they commit suicide? Because some of my people are really young. They may not know.
Oh, yeah. Well, they drank some vodka and took pills with it. And then they covered their heads in plastic. And
so crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, and then they covered themselves.
Purple cloth.
Yeah, the really bizarre part about their mass suicide was just the amount of
There's a lot of bizarre parts.
Well, yeah, there's actually a lot. But just the matching and the aesthetics of it.
Because they all wore the same track suits.
The same black track suits. The same black Nike high tops.
Which are included in one of our
And it's all scriptures. There. It's like all the matching Nikes, and it's all there in miniature. And another one that I thought was really, you know what I loved, I was telling my friend Margo about, was the Jamestown one. Because, you know, as you know, that's where drinking the Kool-Aid
Jonestown.
So they're all drinking the Kool-Aid. And you actually had like all the cups, like this big mini, like mountain of red cups.
Yeah.
You guys did a lot of research. Did you research that?
Yes.
And so how did you know that it looked like that? Or,
well, the cups weren't actually red. I have to throw that out there. Yeah. We took a little bit of
we take a little artistic
to make it read.
You know, we like the pull of it looking at first glance like maybe a frat party, you know, the aftermath of a frat party. But then upon closer inspection, you start seeing little hints of like the needles and little hints that point to something a little more ominous than a frat party. And then, yeah, I mean, Jonestown, they drank Kool-Aid. I mean, it's awful, but and children, they forced the Kool-Aid down the children's throats. And the whole thing was just this.
Which are what some of the syringes we have, very miniature. This is all very miniature, by the way. The Solo cups are less than a half inch tall. And we have the same number of Solo cups that actually have
909.
People, 909 of people that died there. So that each one represents one of the people
made by hand.
Yeah. Yeah. But we like this dichotomy because it is like, we want to draw all the viewers in with these miniatures, with them being cute and being like little dollhouse things and the cute little red Solo cups. But then once you're involved and invested in the piece, then you kind of come around to what we're looking at, which is tragic.
And horrible. Yeah, exactly. And there's so many. I mean, it's a huge gallery. It's filled with, I mean, there's just so many different scenarios. And like when you walk in, the feeling you get is like, this is so fun and cute, like you're in a kid's museum or something. And then when you start looking at what they're really symbolic, what the stories are, you have a completely different feeling. So it's a real mindfuck, which we all love.
Yeah. And which we concentrate on a lot with our work is that bringing you in with the bright colors or the beautiful textures or layout or miniature versus maximum. And then there's a darker subject matter that we'd like to explore.
It's fabulous.
And bring to the attention of the visitor, obviously.
And the whole thing just feels so hilarious, which is really, really weird.
Yeah.
Like to have all those feelings combine into like, this is crazy. This is hilarious. So I absolutely love the show. And I want you to describe one of the other pieces, but I just want to tell them what my favorite piece is. So there's some really, really big pieces in there. How tall are the big pieces? Like 12 feet?
12 to 13.
Yeah. Yeah. But my favorite piece is The Death of the White Men. It's my absolute favorite piece. And I love the topic, and I didn't realize what it was. And then I think Paul or somebody told me. So it's this torso of a white guy, and it has all these 12 feet tall, and it has to scale all these arrows in it. And what it is, it's symbolic of that guy, that guy that tried to convert those natives on that island in, like, where they're not allowed to go. You explain it. Listen to me.
That was the recent event on Sentinel Island off the
coast. I also have to interject that it's not just that, too. Yeah. It's also St. Sebastian, who was like this... The martyrdom of St. Sebastian. So the imagery kind of reflects that, and then that incident happened, which kind of just reaffirmed, like... The continual self martyrdom of the white.
These are ingredients going into the same soup, but the overall effect of the piece that we both feel and that we want to have known is the title of the piece is Tipping Point, and I feel that we are at a tipping point.
I got the title wrong.
But we are at a certain tipping point, uh-huh. Historically speaking, of where. Myself, my people, you know, the fat white guy, the fat middle-aged white guy, it has been in control for so long and has screwed up so much that we want, and I feel like a lot of people want something different, something new, have someone else have a turn at running things, have someone else present mm-hmm. their ideas and give someone else a chance. And that's kind of what this piece is kind of what we're, It's a little cruel. It's a little hopeful. It's a little bit of a lot of those emotions and those feelings that hopefully things are going to be changing for the better.
Yeah, well, I love.
But also looking on the past on how bad it's been too.
Yeah, no, I love the irony of what I think is so ironic. I love the irony of that guy being so arrogant as to go to an island where he's not supposed to go, where people have been killed, where there's all these warnings that he shouldn't be there, and then he winds up getting killed, unsurprisingly. But it's that kind of arrogance that is actually the reason that white men are on the downside now, because of people like Clown Car, who is so arrogant and stupid combined that he's actually kind of ruining it for all the deserving white men. I think there are deserving white men.
Sure.
And it is the arrogance mm-hmm. was the jumping off point. I mean, that was what kind of this arrogance that middle-aged white men have right now is extreme, and it's
and then I also have to add that in the back there's the marzipan replicas of the man mm-hmm. which you can eat
mm-hmm. and I ate one. They're good. Really good,
and that's kind of like this strange ritual aspect of eating the white man that you know like eat my body, that kind of brings it back to more of this religious level that we like to involve in the work as well.
Interesting. Yeah. So Jen, you were saying that so when you did the research for Heaven's Gate, which is cult suicide that occurred in 1997, the beliefs, so this is what it says, folks. I'm just going to tell you what this is about. Their beliefs included a faith in ancient astronauts that they thought ancient astronauts were going to come and save them, and then they all wound up killing each other, and they all lived in these... bunk beds, and they all had the same shoes. And why were the, so tell us about the research you did, and why'd they have the same shoes? What was that about again?
I could be wrong here, but I think that they just liked the matching outfit, you know, like mm-hmm. it was just like they were graphic designers. So I think that there was like this strange aesthetic.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And their whole aesthetics were just so intriguing to me. And I actually came across, I mean, I knew about them, but I came across their website, and like that piece was actually the first piece we made. We made it a couple years ago, actually. I can't remember when, mm-hmm. but I went to their website, and it said for passes, because there are still passes left to get on this, to ride this.
So the cult believed that the Halley Bob Comet was coming around.
Oh, right.
With a mothership. Mothership was following in the tail of the comet. And when the comet came close to Earth, they were going to be beamed up to the mothership and then taking on
and taken into space.
And they offered
the gist of the gold.
Yes, and they offered boarding passes online. So I was like, and I said to email this email. So I emailed them. You know, I was like, this is strange. They're all dead. Why am I? Who am I emailing? But then, like within like 5 minutes, someone responded back to me. I wrote them asking if there are any boarding passes, and then this long conversation ensued because it turns out that they left. I'm using quotes here. This is what they said, that they left a couple of them behind to answer correspondence. And they're still doing that. Like I would imagine if anyone went to, I don't think it's www.heavensgate. Yeah. I don't know specifically what it is. And so they responded back and forth to me. And we got this conversation
So in other words, they're still an active cult, and you were speaking with somebody who's still actively believing in that comet's coming around again.
Yeah. There is at least one person.
Yeah, at least one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And who answers emails.
Yeah. Mm. So there you have it.
Should you find the email
address? Yeah. So you really did turned over a few rocks there, didn't you?
Yeah, I like doing
that. But anyway, it's interesting because there's a lot of research. You can tell there's a lot of research done because all these things are really thought out and described. And you can learn a lot about the horrors, the weird shit horrors of America if you go there to the site. I think it's a really great show, and do not miss it. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to remind people again that they're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, and then we're going to talk about your processor, all that other stuff. So as I said, I'm reminding people that you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. And we are the best radio station in the world. And you should, we have this after school program for teens. Did you know that? It's really amazing because we are teaching teens how to make their own radio shows right here in the studio. And they get to make their own shows. So I encourage you to go online to our teen program and look it up, and it's another good thing. It's radiofreebrooklyn.org/afterschool, and get your teen involved, donate some money. So you're listening to Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit, and I have Paul Outlaw and Jen Catron here, and we are talking about them and this amazing show that they have up right now at Postmaster's Gallery, which is at 54 Franklin Street. Okay, you're caught up now? Right. So anyway, so you guys met at Cranbrook. You met in college, but you're both from small towns, right?
Yes.
And I have this written down. Well, Paul's from?
Fairhope, Alabama, which is on the Gulf Coast. Close to Mobile.
Alabama folks.
Yeah,
and
Alabama.
And Jen's from a small town in southern Illinois, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm from a township, Farrington Township.
Not even a town.
The closest town is Blueford, which is barely a town. And then the next biggest town would be Mount Vernon.
Okay. So how many kids in your high school class?
Well, in my grade school class, I had 6 classmates, and it was a public school. There was just nobody around. It's just a tiny rural area. My high school had, I think, 50 classmates. I think that's correct.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So that's really, really small town.
Yeah.
And you basically grew up, was it like a farm or a...
Farming area. A lot of my family were farmers, but very rural. You know, the closest gas station was like 35, 40 minutes away.
Gas station?
Yeah.
Can you imagine living like that?
It was nuts. It was normal
for me.
Run out
of gas a lot.
Yeah. You have to really plan things
out. And so, Paul, how many kids in your high school?
I think the high school was 1,500 or something.
Yeah, yeah. But still, like it's Alabama.
Yeah,
not a lot of artists from not a big artist town.
Yeah, no, they encourage the creative stuff in Alabama. A lot of it is more
right wing.
No,
right wing artwork.
That's a given. But
paintings of Jesus.
Folk art would be a lot.
So you guys met at Cranbrook, which if you don't know is a really really well-regarded art school in Detroit, Michigan, but a very sophisticated, well-regarded one. So when you guys, how did you guys met at school?
Yeah, we both went to school the same years. We were there for 2 years. Cranbrook's just the graduate program, so there's no...
It's an MFA so program. Kind of did you recognize any of like that weird, like not from a typical urban area, art area in your cell, in each other right away?
Well, I definitely saw that in Jen immediately.
Because she's a fucking hick, man.
This is the first time she had been into a big city, I think.
I've told Jenna several times by now that I've wanted to spend the whole hour talking about her pet raccoons, yes. But we can't do that.
I did have pet raccoons growing up.
It's personal to me.
Kibbles and Bits were their names.
We're going to have another. Is that right? We're going to have to do an hour on that later. Yeah. So did you guys kind of like felt like you got each other from where are most of the kids from at Cranbrook?
They're from a good
urban areas.
For the most part. Definitely
a lot of different.
Not like different areas from people. Us. I think we stood out a little bit from the areas that we're from, though, sure.
From being Hicks.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So how did you
not,
guys...
not a lot of Southern people, and then Jen's practically from the South.
Well,
despite what my family says. But
despite being a Yankee.
Despite not having that access.
Yes. Yeah.
So how did you guys meet? Like, how did you actually meet?
Well,
we were in the sculpture department together.
We met the very first day. Yeah. I mean, I met him the first day I went to Cranbrook, and and I think we got in a fight almost immediately, which was strange because we actually don't fight that much as a couple. But at the beginning, I think there was this immediate like weird tension that we were like, Paul probably was not, but I was immediately competing with Paul. I was he's the guy that I'm competing with.
Really? What made you think that?
Egos collide.
Yeah. Well, he was like as loud as I was and like stood out and was very, he just has a presence about him. And I immediately wanted to compete with him. I don't know why.
Did you say to yourself, like, this guy's really good. I want to like make better art.
A
little bit.
A little bit. Yeah. And
I could tell immediately that Jen looked up to me.
Oh, what an asshole.
That is such a dick thing to say.
I'm just kidding.
I know.
But yeah, we were friends at first. Well, yeah.
So were you thinking like I'd like to date that guy or just like I want to be better than that guy?
A little bit of both. But at the time, I had a boyfriend coming in, so we didn't date immediately.
From
Southern Illinois. Yeah,
oh, that would never last. Not with a guy like Paul around.
I know, Paul ain't
letting anybody get in the way of that.
And Paul's treating graduate school like The Bachelor. So
yeah.
Handing out roses.
So what were? Oh my gosh! What were you dating a lot of chicks? The girls.
Well, I don't
the
know
girls,
if a lot.
The girls, he fancies himself.
Were the girls like going? I was
playing.
Like, I want
I was
that
playing
guy.
The field.
What was it like, Jen? You tell me, because I'm not. Paul's word isn't going to be.
Yeah,
good
I mean,
on
he
this.
Was. He was dating. He was dating different girls until I decided that he wasn't going to date any girls, and it was me. And then that was just it. I was like, okay, we're together. That's it.
And
that is kind of how
that's
that
actually
happened,
exactly
yes.
what happened.
Was Paul dating a lot of different girls and dating you? Or were you like,
no, I'm dating
him and you're not dating anybody
else?
Yeah.
Because at Cranbrook, you can't, you know,
that's
everyone's
a very small place.
A very small community. Like, I just put my foot down and that was it.
So that was really smart. You waited till Paul like tested the whole team out. And then you were like, okay, now you're ready for me, man.
Yeah, Jim would actually see me talking to another girl on campus.
And everyone would tell me.
And then she would come over and sit between us.
Yeah. Good for you.
She's very persistent.
So it was the competitiveness. And what were you thinking, Paul? Were you thinking, this girl's so great. No, this girl can handle me is probably what you were thinking. What were you thinking?
Yes.
Besides
she,
the fact
she's
a, that she's gorgeous.
She's incredibly,
she's the best looking one there.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, right. So that was easy.
Yes.
You're that, like,
that
that's
was,
the
that
best
was the easy
looking
part, but,
one.
But that's not, but that, I mean, that's not,
no,
that's not all it takes for me. Like I need more substance.
Deep.
I need more depth. But yeah, Jen's incredibly feisty, super intelligent.
Yes.
As stubborn as I am. And very strong,
but
very
what,
strong personality.
What were you
and
thinking?
these are the
were
things
you,
that I'm like, oh well, this is. This
I mean,
is,
were you like, oh my
this
god,
this is something different. This is something weird. This is.
Did she? So were you thinking like, I hope that chick likes me, or like from the beginning, or?
Well, I obviously want everyone to like me.
So you wanted all the girls to like you.
But it was an initial attraction, of course. But then it also is something that Jen really shows me what she's made of over a little bit of time, and that's the things that I'm really really attracted to most of is this strong personality and who's super competitive and right most of the time and not afraid to tell you so and able to because I say what I want to say most of the time and I tell people what I think, and to have someone like stand up to that is that's an attractive feature. I like to have something that bounces. She could deal with you, and she could kick
the other chicks to the curb. Right. Yeah. So you were like, did she, but she, like, once she said, like, that's it, you're like, no problem, right? You were with the program.
We'll see how this goes.
Yeah.
And here we are.
How's it going? So how is it going?
Yeah. Well, it's going great.
It's pretty good.
It's going good.
Yeah. Okay, so
we get better and better all the time together.
Okay, so here's the thing about Jen and Paul, folks. I will speak for myself, but I think a lot of people would concur, is that they magically, like, the work is really great. They have said multiple times in multiple places that there's really no distinction about, like, they couldn't tell you who does what or who made what or whose idea was. They're really in sync as far as conceiving of the work and the execution of the work and all that. Like, they don't know where it begins and ends. So and they also seem to really genuinely like each other, which makes everybody, people like me, like my husband and I bicker all the time, and it makes people like me insane because they create this amazing stuff together and they seem to always be enjoying each other's company. Like, it's horrible. I don't know. It's just not right. That's not fair. So anyway, I want to dig into that a little, and I was sort of positing the idea about, like, what happens with they, like what Paul just said, and I saw him say this in a video, you just said she's always right. Like, I mean there doesn't seem to be a clash of egos where somebody has to have their way or somebody always thinks they're right. So can you guys talk about that a little bit? Like, how does that work out? Like, who, what happens? Do you always, you just go, that's a great idea? Or how do you negotiate that?
And I think what we often say when people ask us how we work together is that this is an unusual thing we have going. Mm-hmm. Like, I think a lot of people would have a lot of trouble working mm-hmm. with someone so closely that you're in a relationship with, sure. and produce the same, especially artists. Yeah. Artists are notorious for having huge egos. But what we have together works remarkably well. Part of it is because I think that we're both trying to impress each other so much.
So true.
And what everything that we're doing is in order to impress the other one.
And we're
tough critics. Like, a lot of things don't impress us too much. So it's that kind of competition with each other but it's a loving competition, but it does make both of us better and we don't take. We don't take it personally, and we also don't try to slide one by the other one. Like, we get called out for it. Like, that's not going to work. That's a horrible idea. That's stupid. Why did you come up with it?
Well, we never say stupid. You know,
but that's kind of it's an encouraging relationship for each other to improve each other all the time. I think that's one thing that makes it work.
And we're really good about bouncing ideas off of each other. And I think our general methodology is just to, like, keep on talking to each other about the ideas. And then if an idea is really bad, it's also okay. You know, like, we kind of filter through them naturally. Mm-hmm. So, like, if something doesn't stick, it's never like, I don't think either of us pushes an idea too much if the other person isn't really on board. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of it too. Like,
well, how about aesthetics? Do you guys agree on aesthetics a lot? Like, on what you like? I mean, that's part of it too, or...
Yeah, I mean, I think we generally agree on aesthetics.
And from my point of view, I have a set of aesthetics that I like, and I present it. And I think this is really good. And then Jen comes in and makes changes that I 99.9% of the time think, oh, that made it so much better.
And it does remove the preciousness of things, which I think can be really healthy, especially when we're, like, for example, even painting. Paul will paint something or I'll paint something and the other person will come and just paint right on top of it.
That's so great.
And it's just, it's okay. It's like suddenly you're revisiting the whole subject of what you just painted in a brilliant way. And you understand if you really are attached to that. If I really like it, I might paint it right back on top of what Paul just painted over.
Oh, that's wonderful.
But it's this push and pull and we never get really angry at each other. It's just part of the process.
And you have to relinquish that. To the other person too, knowing that maybe that wasn't perfect. Well, and maybe it does need to be changed and maybe it does need to be better.
I think that part of what does make your work really good is the fact that the two of you seem to create a sense of safety almost, because most artists that work alone go out there and they're not sure if it's good or bad, or they're the ones who are going to be embarrassed or whatever. But you guys have kind of a way of sort of there's a protective feeling, right?
Yeah.
And I think that does raise our confidence.
Yeah, there's a natural filter too. Like we do things, and when things aren't good enough, like one of us will recognize that, and then it's not put out there. So there's not that anxiety. There's less anxiety.
There
about.
Is. Yeah. It's kind of a gift.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah.
It relieves any doubt. Like you have doubt. Is this piece good? And then Jen's like, yeah, of course this piece is good. So then I'm like, yeah, of course this piece is good. And then you can go out into the world and explain that to anybody who will listen.
You know, it seems to me a lot of the secret to it, to me personally, is from my experience out in the world, is that Paul is unusually secure. Because
thank you, Dr. Lisa.
As a male, traditionally, I mean, I had a really well-known, now deceased curator, Annie Herron, say to me once, and I'll never forget this, this is like over like 15 years ago, 20 years ago, say to me, she thinks that as far as artist couples go, it works better if the man is a little more successful than the woman. So I'm just talking about stereotypes and what I've seen, and stereotypes are true for a reason, but maybe, Jen, you're a little more aggressive than most women about your ideas, which is great. But also, I think it is traditionally classic that the man would want to be the one with the idea or be right or somehow be in charge. And you seem to be comfortable with that, Paul? Or
yeah, traditionally, stereotypically speaking, I would say that, yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a false ego that I don't need. That's not something that I need to make me feel complete or whole. Yeah, I'm proud of what I've done. I'm very confident in what I've done.
So how did you get to be so confident as a guy? Do you think this is true, Jen, by the way?
I think he's exceptionally confident, but also, like, I would say that I'm probably more confident in a lot of aspects of art making than Paul is. Paul, you know, we each have our own like burst of confidence. Like, I know I'm very smart when it comes to conceptualizing a piece.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul knows when to be like, to boldly put out this piece that maybe I'm not so comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a certain amount of like this white male artist archetype that still exists. But I'm trying to shift that a little bit here and, you know, squash that a little bit and turn the tables a little bit and say that it, you know, that I want to be the confident female artist in this relationship, and really, I'm not very modest about things, but I think when you start looking at the history of art and who has predominated art, really, it's been white males.
Right,
so I
course.
Think there's always that weird, history that exists in art making, that exists and maybe in our relationship, that we're always kind of navigating. I'm always trying to shift the balance of powers.
Mm-hmm.
But Paul also is okay with that shifting of balance of powers. You know, like he's 100% behind it. And
well, Jen, I think maybe you're that way naturally, or maybe because of your upbringing. I mean, maybe you're more confident than the, you know, we're talking broad generalizations here. But did you get a lot of encouragement? Did you know you were good at things, or you're more confident than average?
Possibly, you know, I hate making like broad generalizations about other people's confidence levels, but I will say personally, I feel very confident, and I think a lot of that was because I was kind of I didn't have a lot of peers growing up. Mm-hmm. It was so isolated that I just kind of developed myself. I just developed myself in so many ways. And that kind of gave me this weird sense of confidence.
Oh, so you didn't have like people looking over your shoulder, like making fun of you a lot.
Yeah.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
I have an older brother who's lives in Chicago and he's a scientist.
Close?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, he's so smart family.
Yeah, huh? He's very smart.
Paul's nodding. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fuck smart
yeah.
Family.
Yeah. Smart family. We're fucked. We're like Hicks from Alabama. So
we're smart in our own way.
But I'm also wondering if even though it's easy to see the fabulousness of Jen, that maybe there are a lot of guys out there that wouldn't have been able to handle, they wouldn't have been comfortable with that kind of confidence.
I think a lot, yes.
Did you have problems with that, with guys? I mean, did you date?
I didn't really care. You know, yeah,
Do you have problems with that?
Yeah, but I'm to be frank, I never really focused on dating. To be honest, like I never really like with guys.
Well, there was no one to date.
Yeah,
for the
there's
raccoons.
No one to date. Right. I mean, I had in my grade school there was only one guy in my class, and then in high school there was like I don't know, not very many possibilities. I mean, half of them were my cousins.
Well, you know, so say where you're from. Can't you just marry your brother or something?
Yeah. Well, and maybe in Alabama, but not in Illinois.
Whatever.
Yeah. But yeah, there just weren't options. And so frankly, like guys weren't even something I really thought about. It wasn't a big part of my life. In some ways, that freed me up to think about other things.
Mm-hmm.
There just weren't options. And it wasn't a big part of my life. And dating wasn't a thing.
So have you not really, you were an undergrad. How about undergrad? Did you date an undergrad? Did you have a boyfriend then?
I had a boyfriend then. I haven't had a whole lot of dating experience, really.
Lucky you.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm fine with that. I feel like that wasn't ever a stressful part of my life, and it's, you know.
So in when you were, was the guy that, were you dominating to the guy in college that you dated? Your other boyfriend?
Yeah, but we were long distance, and he just kind of let me. He let me have freedom, which is kind of what I need. You know, I need, and he was great for that, and he was a wonderful person. Mm-hmm. But then, his personality probably was very far from mine. Well, not probably. His personality was very, very opposite of mine. So Paul kind of was more like me, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I still give Jen freedom. She
She
needs it. She can't be cooped up in a cage.
Yes.
What do you mean? What do you mean freedom? Like to just leave, do what you want.
Not even physical. Just
to be yourself.
Yeah, to be myself.
More to be yourself. Like,
yeah.
There's no expectations.
Yeah,
she needs to act or.
Yeah,
or,
he never is like disapproving of things that I do. He's very.
You can't wear that to that. It's cold out. Put on a winter coat.
Of
shit.
Of course not.
Yeah.
But Jen's also like, she's weird and she needs to be weird sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's totally cool. Like, I love it.
Yeah,
I love
really
it when she be as weird as she wants to be.
Really? Can you give us a weird example?
Oh, just
herself.
Silly. Like, you give her some candy and she kind of goes out of control. but yeah, nothing major, but just like this freedom to be yourself.
Just little things. And
to be weird.
Things. And you're not monitoring
right,
her.
Yeah.
That's great. Do you realize we only have 7 fucking minutes?
Man,
really?
So
this was going to be so fast.
Okay.
So I want to there's got to be just because it can't all be beautiful. So there's got to be some things where you guys get on each other's nerves or stress. What kind of things do you guys work on in your relationship? Or is there anything? They're looking blank when I say it. It is perfect.
I gotta say,
just fuck me.
We have a really good relationship. It's really like there's obviously little tits and tats and,
mm-hmm. and yeah. When we get stressed out, like we can be short with each other at times.
But you don't really have any big.
But
conflict.
It's like wash the dishes. You know, not like a nothing crazy or serious.
Do you think that maybe part of the reason? I mean, it seems to me I should say is part of the reason. Maybe you have a good. Good relationship. I mean, it happens to be like a great match as far as art making, but I also think individually you both seem really secure in yourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You seem like you both have particularly strong personalities.
We both have very, very strong personalities, and that's another reason that's kind of remarkable that this works at all. It's really just because we're extremely strong personalities and we both have to be ourselves, and neither one of us would bend to someone else's
will to be something else or something different.
But you're
different.
The same that way, and you understand that about each other.
And we allow that for each other.
It's kind of like the opposite of codependent folks, whatever that is. That's you guys.
Yeah, maybe
oh, so. Shit.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, shit. Like, I'm trying to poke holes in this, and I can't find any.
Yeah, I
but we also have total trust in each other and total faith in the other one. Like, when just the small story about, like, being in social situations, like we'll separate in the room and go work the crowd, the crowd on our own, and then meet back.
Yeah, you guys are great socially. I mean, you really, and it works, like, and, yeah.
And we do that art making too. Like, we'll, I don't know, we'll spend entire nights where we're separated and doing separate things, but we each know that what the other person is doing is important, and it works.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything, is art, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, and your art is certainly interesting and varied enough, but is art really it? Like, do you guys do anything else? Are you always working? What's it like? What's it like at your household?
Oh, yeah. We're making art or socializing.
Which is also work.
Yeah.
I do feel like we work all the time.
Yeah.
Like, we'll take a vacation.
We do take vacations.
Like that,
we do travel. And we travel, we go, like, we do adventurous traveling. It's not like laying on a beach because look at my skin tone. It's more of like, we really travel.
Yeah.
Do adventures. I don't know. We went to we did an African safari and went camping out in the middle of Serengeti. And they're they're like lions and water buffalo actually just walking beside your tent. We do motorcycle trips. I drive a motorcycle too. We do trips across different areas. Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, any reality show producers listening to this, this is your
team.
Probably already spoken to them.
Have you had people?
Well, after we were on Chopped, we had so many people.
Oh, I didn't know you were on Chopped.
On Chopped.
Oh,
because
how
of the food
truck.
It was the pinnacle of our performance.
I'm going to have to look food that up. So what happened after that? I can
imagine. Well, we just had producers come at us crazy.
And what happened?
They typically want to do the same show over and over and over.
Yeah, what is that?
Some competition where...
And we have like...
You guys are sculptors, right? We're like, yeah, well, how about a collector really wants a piece by Friday, but you have to get it done, but you're running out of money
and then you guys
you're
like
at each
fight.
Other's throats and then you fight, but then you make up at the end and then... I'm like, well, that sounds like every other reality TV show.
You know, that's really great because that gets us back to where we started, which is the big I word, integrity. So you would turn down that. And I think there's a lot of...
We definitely have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was there money attached and stuff like that?
Oh, there's never really money attached.
I don't think they pay for reality TV.
But it would give you a lot of visibility, but you don't want that.
We don't
want that kind.
Yeah.
So there you go, folks. That's what I'm trying to tell you. I've learned so much today. I learned how I can improve. I'm going to work on my relation. You know, I actually have couples therapy with Phil after this. Sorry, Phil. I don't know if I'm supposed to say this. And now I know, I can see like what we can work on. I'm getting it. So I've actually really learned a lot today because of you guys. I think they're really good. I think you guys are a rare, and you appreciate how lucky you are, right?
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so I'm glad to hear. I'm glad to actually confirm that, it's like really sick how great their relationship
is.
Sorry to disappoint.
No, it's great. And you know what's great? Being around these guys is really infectious. And you do like make such a huge effort in all your work to bring people into it and share the joy. As cheesy as that sounds, they share the joy.
That's important to us.
But I just want to make sure that I remind you about where their show is. And you got to go see it. It's at Postmaster's Gallery, which is at 54 Franklin Street in Tribeca. The show is up until, where is the, up
February 23rd.
February 23rd. And it's, I really, really encourage you to go because it's just fantastic. So thanks a lot. And what's the website, Postmasters and Jen, what's your website?
Our personal website is